Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we're back with Joshua Lewis Smith.
Hey!
Resident QIOer, tenor of the year.
Oh, thank you.
All year, every year.
Every year, oh.
For the rest of eternity.
Someone cast me.
Yep.
Well, you did get cast.
I am doing a show.
Yeah, you're in...
Johnny Johnson.
Chicago Folks Operetta.
With Gabe DeGennaro.
With Gabe, who's the best.
We could start saying friend of the show. Would that be fun? It wouldn't be fun, is the answer to that.
Because we have a lot of friends, because we're very popular.
We're very popular. We, like, not to toot my own horn or our own horn or anything, but, like, I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this, like, burst of popularity.
I could be more popular. I could stand for this.
Because you're needy.
Yes. Also, I could stand for this to be more popular. So actually, let's open up with everybody invite a friend to listen to our podcast because I'm needy.
Everyone invite a friend to go like a picture on my personal Instagram. The Joshua Lewis, same as my Twitter.
You know what? I think that's a little more important than our podcast. So everybody right now, I'll wait. Take out your phones.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unlock them.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay. So go to your Instagram. Okay. Perfect. Type in the Joshua Lewis.
Yep.
Okay. T-H-E.
I'm getting my phone out. My giant fucking phone.
The Joshua Lewis. There it is.
There it is.
All right. And just like have a field day. Like them all.
I already liked this picture.
Okay.
Most recently.
Audition Chic. Shaved face.
Ooh.
Oh, isn't the Winter Garden fantastic?
I love the Winter Garden.
The Winter Garden is so good.
Yeah. For reference, he's talking about the Winter Garden at the...
Harold Washington.
But you know this because right now you're looking at Josh's Instagram.
Which, and you can also see that, a picture of that, not me there, but there's a picture of that on Scoppy's.
There is.
From one that Daniel took.
Yeah.
There is.
Also, speaking of our social media, I just posted, just as in right now it's Saturday night, we're posting this, as you're listening to this, it's probably Monday, on Saturday, technically, I posted an article, from the Militant Baker. She put together a list of 135 Instagram accounts with the purpose of people being able to diversify their Instagram feeds.
Yes, I saw that you posted that.
So basically, if you're lamenting the fact that you're in a bubble, but you don't and you don't know how to fix it, this is how, is by diversifying your worldview. I followed 7 of them, and I am now following a trans woman in Mumbai, a black woman in Harlem, a couple, like, fat women who are just, like, killing the game. It's awesome.
So I have from my Instagram neediness days, I have a very bad habit of being able to just ghost down someone's feed and just like every picture. So first off, you have 40 Instagram notifications or so probably right now. I just got to this one and I gotta read this caption out, if this is okay. Where did it go?
Yeah, this is gonna be great for me because I don't...
Who is gonna turn 29 in a Catholic dorm? This gay Jew.
That's the summer that we met!
That was like the week we met.
That was the week
cool.
we met.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. So the dorms that Opera Theater of Pittsburgh, now Pittsburgh Festival of Opera, put you up in, or at least they did the 2 summers I was there, were, now I can't remember the name of the university, but it's a Catholic university, and it's a completely dry campus, and on the first floor of the dorms are the offices of the nuns.
What?
Yeah, the nuns live there. You didn't stay there.
See, I wasn't allowed in.
Right, because you never...
Never once went up to those dorms. I tried to sneak in one night after a night of drinking and, like, hang out with a bunch of people, and I was not allowed.
Oh, I think
in.
I remember that night, yeah. Yeah, so I say they were my first summer there, and it was a dorm.
I don't know why I tried to sneak into Catholic dorms, but I guess that's just, like, how desolate the social scene was.
Yeah.
That's from Opera Theater Pittsburgh.
None of us were ever drinking on that dry campus. Don't... Not a never, never every night. None of us. Oh, Maureen's phone dropped.
And it's dead.
New phone. Dropped already.
I have an OtterBox. I'm fine.
No, yeah, you're right. No.
Guys, we are 5 minutes into this episode.
We've said a lot in these
and we've said a lot.
Well, we got some business to take care of. First off, being I need to apologize to Allie Grauer. I'm so sorry. You were our first author. And I'm recognizing that now, that I'm a monster.
Here's the thing, though.
You were our first author.
Here's the thing. It's not entirely, like, horrible that you forgot, because you weren't in that interview. Mm-hmm. It was Josh and I who did that interview. So I
also, she's multi-talented and does so many different things.
She does.
Yeah, so I mean, like, to only call her an author would be a disservice.
Yeah.
She's a performer. She's a... I was going to say writer, obviously.
Yeah.
She's, like, a wonderful photographer. She's a musician. Like, no, she's killing the game.
Yep.
Yes.
So
Allie Grauer, I'm sorry. Thank you for having us on your podcast. I hope your day is going well. We're going to tag you on in the body of this post for this episode. Be like, we publicly apologize to
Allie Grauer. For being forgetful and weird.
Yep. Yep. I deleted the post. Not just because it's very easy for me to delete a post. Do either of you guys do this? Where, like, I'll post something on Facebook, and then if I get, like, one, not even bad necessarily, just, like, not good. Like, if I get one, like, weird comment, I, like, or, like, just anything that has to make me think about myself.
Anything that makes good. You go, oh, Daniel, you delete it.
Yeah.
No, I do. I live with it. And then I really like when it comes... when things come up, let me tell you about this on a Facebook tangent. So, you know, it does the on this day thing.
Oh, yeah. This day in Eunice.
Yeah. So, first of all, I regularly crack myself up at things that I said years ago.
Dude, me too.
Which, right? Isn't that the best? I'm like, oh, well, I'm a narcissist. But also, I like when I can't understand what they were. Today, something popped up. I mean, my Facebook status was Josh. I think it was probably from back in the day when it was still is.
Oh, yeah,
when Facebook put the is in your status, and it was Joshua Lewis Smith. It was a trash can that eats ducks. And I wish I knew the context. Maybe there was no context.
My favorite is that, like, 3 or 4 years ago, I would just go on just tirades on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and they're fucking hilarious. Like,
yours?
Yeah, my Twitter tirades are the best. I would go on Twitter tirades, and then I would also I would live tweet nannying. So I had a good one today where I'm gonna pull it up because I think it's really funny. Sorry, everybody. Bear with me. I'm just going to crack myself up
really
quick.
So I want to talk about something else real quick.
Yeah.
Can I go back to being really funny 3 years ago?
I
want to
talk about the healthcare repeal being back on the chopping block.
God damn it. Really?
Is that bad? Well, here's the thing. Apparently,
I mean, I want to talk about it, but then I don't want to bring it back to me being funny 3 years ago.
we'll get there. Well, so I think the thing that's interesting about it is apparently made the bill, and if somebody's a legitimate, like, real on journalist and really knows, because I've heard conflicting things, the sources that I know that I listen to that are, like, pretty on the pulse have stated it that basically the new repeal bill for the Obamacare is actually more restrictive or more conservative, mm-hmm. and that was that the reason that they couldn't get enough Republican votes the first time was that it wasn't conservative enough.
Yes,
but it turns out that now they still can't get enough votes. And it might be because they now went the other way, and so now you're centrist Republicans. So in other words, it's weirdly comforting to know that there is just as big of a fissure within the Republican Party as there is within the Democratic Party mm-hmm. right now. Because there is also a giant fissure in the Democratic Party between the, like, progressive establishment and, like, basically, because the progressive establishment, like, championed some guy who's pro-life, that's a Democratic candidate.
Yes.
And so, I think there also needs, if with Democrats, there needs to be a middle ground between, like, recognizing that, like, pro-choice is a conversation we very much need to have, and we need to be talking about abortion, but also, like, shit in conservative capitalism is fucked right now.
Yeah, at least it is reassuring to me that both of us, that both parties need to, shape up.
Right, that everyone's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that it goes back to the idea that the Founding Fathers had of, like, the two-party system doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just think that, I don't know. There are too many differences in opinion to be able to be like, I'm a Republican. Well, my views are wildly different than yours, but mm-hmm. I guess because it's my only option, I'm only a Republican. I'm also a Republican.
Yes. And that's the thing, there's right? A lot of that. Is the thing that a lot of the progressive side of the Democratic Party is critiquing the centrist Democratic part of the party, the centrist part of the party. On is that we've completely neglected our working class roots and neglected the idea of reaching out to the people. Whereas like there is a section of people that voted for Trump because he was the one that was talking about taking care of the working class,
despite
and talking about making jobs. And of course that was like,
well, that's why a portion of your family voted for Trump. Yeah, right?
And it makes sense. But of course, as they are all finding out now.
Oh, he doesn't give a flying fuck.
But yeah. But those are people who need to be appealed to, and
And that's the other thing is that like the Democrats weren't really, no one's really looking out for specifically like
the working class. And I mean, the thing is, it's very much a conversation that people are starting to have now. But like, it's hard. And, man, and, like, of course I'm, like, a feminist, and I am in no way saying that, like, we shouldn't be talking about abortion as much as possible so that we can talk about it. But, like, it's also hard to watch the conversation of, like, people trying to talk about economics and like, policy and, like, progressive policy get, like, be like, well, you're not talking about abortion enough. And it's like, well, I think that, I mean, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe there are progressive candidates that don't care enough about abortion and should be talking about it more. Or, like,
I think
that we shouldn't, maybe we shouldn't be supporting a pro-life candidate.
Here's the thing, is that we're currently, let's say the Trump presidency doesn't last 4 years.
Yeah.
Then we're looking at Mike Pence being our president. And he is, his first move is going to be putting abortion on the chopping block.
Yeah.
And that being said, I think that abortion needs to be on the forefront of political discourse and political discussion and like really getting our ducks in a row to be able to defend that right.
And as this two-party system exists right now and as the Democratic Party exists, I don't think we can afford to have a pro-life Democratic...
No.
Democrat. No. Anywhere. Yeah.
That's a conversation we had maybe 3 weeks ago, where like if we don't have a Democratic Party that is working towards like public healthcare and public education and like funding towards those things, mm-hmm. then we need to clean house. And mm-hmm. I think we do need to draw that line. And the other thing too is equating, and I don't want to sound like an entire Bernie Sanders supporter. I do support Bernie Sanders, but like I think the thing for me is like, I don't think Bernie Sanders has always voted pro-choice and is extremely pro-choice and has always been that way. And like I know that there's a giant contingency of Bernie supporters that are fucking douchebags, but like I don't know, it's hard. And so that's kind of one of my internet frustrations is that one. I want to talk about yours, Josh, because you had a good one. You had a good one this week. You mentioned it in the car and I remember seeing it.
Yeah. Oh, so okay. So I'm sure most of you have now seen this on Facebook where people post a list of, typically it's 10 musicians they've seen and one they haven't and one's a lie and whatever. And it's like fine. It's maybe it's mildly annoying, but it's like fine because Facebook does this and it always goes to this, right?
Yeah.
And I don't care. It's fine. Do it, whatever. I might hide you. I might not. So...
Roll the dice.
But then, so then all of a sudden I start seeing this list pop up of 10 groups of people that would lose their health care under the changes in, you know, the cuts to Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And one that wouldn't is Congress, of course.
Yeah.
And That's fine. I mean, like, yeah, that it's all very real and very true, and maybe some people might have their eyes open to that. But then I saw that starting to get tagged with the top being, you know, while some of you are talking about the musicians we've seen, why don't you read this instead? And that put me into, like, a furious rage. Yourself. Because somehow thinking that your copy and paste slacktivism is better than finding out about your friend's musical taste is just complete bullshit. And also, someone posted this on my Facebook, and I wish I could remember who. They said, also, if you think your friend hasn't, like, read... Well, you think someone posting this hasn't read that same fucking HuffPost article that's popped up the last 40 times. Like, get over it. People don't have one-track minds, right? Mm-hmm. People can understand and have their mind on different things at different times, and sometimes it's entertainment. And I'm not saying it's not important to be talking about the healthcare thing. It's, oh my God, of course it is. I'm not saying it's important to be talking about 10 musicians you've seen but one you haven't. No, it's not important. But don't think that you're better than them because you've copied and pasted someone else's work.
And when we talked about this in the car, I brought up a form of slacktivism specifically that really pisses me off. Mm. And it's like guilt-driven, holier-than-thou bullshit. And it's specifically like, it's like cancer-related copy-paste slacktivism.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you know, while you're lamenting a broken iPod, or I don't know why I keep going to iPod, or like while you're lamenting, you know, the fact that your phone is dead or you can't find your charger, like, you know, just think about, you know, a cancer patient who all a cancer patient wants is to for there to be a cure to cancer. Copy and paste if you agree. It's like, first of all, go fuck yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because no self-respecting cancer patient is going to post such guilt-ridden, ridiculous, lack of perspective nonsense.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Nonsense. Because, like, I don't know, as a person who... most people in my family get cancer. That is how most of my family members have died. My dad died of cancer. All of my grandparents who have died of cancer. Like, cancer is a big part of my life. And I can tell you that cancer patients get pissed off that their phones are dead too. And they don't sit there and say, like, oh, my phone's dead. But you know what's worse? There's no cure for cancer. Like, you need to realize that, like, and also you're not doing anything to cure cancer. You're not doing it. Right. It's not like you're copy and pasting that and then donating to the American Cancer Society or whatever. Like, you're not furthering the cause. You're just being an asshole.
Yeah, and I think, like, looking at struggle, right? I think there's, like, minute-to-minute struggles, hour-to-hour, day-to-day, month-to-month, lifelong struggles. There's these layers. And everyone has those minute-to-minute struggles. And guess what? That's what's going on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
If you forgot your lunch at home, that's what you're going to post about on Facebook. And you could be someone who's never had a big life struggle, or you could be a person who's had cancer. You know, it doesn't... It's pretty universal, and I'm sure that whatever person posts that bullshit probably also has posted, like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I really can't think of something right now. I was all ready. I was all prepped and ready. Oh my God, I burnt my book. Why would you burn it? It was in the kitchen and I burnt it.
Oh my God, I locked my keys in my car.
Yeah, and I'm sure you posted that. Yeah. Did that happen and you were annoyed and you wanted someone to, you know, commiserate with?
Right.
And social media is fantastic for that.
And also, it just goes along with what you were saying of, like, fucking let someone post their 10, you know, 9 groups that they've seen. And, you know, because that's the other part of social media is an escape.
And it is about also getting to know the other people in your life.
Absolutely.
And that's interesting. I'm like, oh, I was like, oh my God, look at these bands that my friends actually have seen. That's really cool. I mean, these people who've seen, like, incredible Like, what? Yeah. And also, I'm just laughing that I sent, oh my God, I burnt my book. Sorry. I think that's really funny.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that's the first thing that came to my brain. Like, what is that? But also, yeah. So anyway, yes, I think that it's fun and it's part of the fun of social media. And sometimes those things will go around and without fail, every time we live in this awful cycle of then you have this, then you have the reactions and the reactions become more prevalent and more irritating than the original meme was in the first place. Mm. And what's even going on. And then I complain about that and we're just in a cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that the moral of the story is that unless someone is claiming that the Holocaust didn't happen, then you need to leave people alone about what they fucking post on social media, because it's social media and who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. No one is claiming to be changing the world by posting 9 bands that they've seen and one lie. And your slacktivism is also not doing anything. So, like, unless after you post about the plight of the cancer patient, you're donating money to a cause that mm-hmm. furthers cancer research, you need to shut the fuck up, because you're doing just as little as the person talking about their bands. So,
and maybe that person who's talking about their bands did just donate money.
Exactly. You
know, like, there's no, it's not, no one I know has committed their entire social media presence to one cause.
No,
they talk about being a person, and then sometimes it's to cause. Sometimes mine's about donating or something political, and sometimes it's about trivial bullshit, and sometimes it's about posting music, you know?
Yeah. Let people do what they want.
I had another really interesting thing that I saw, and this is like strictly politics. I was listening to a podcast episode today, and they were talking about the idea of a land value tax, that tax being based on land value, of like what land you own.
What?
And there was also talk about, did you know that the French, like progressive candidate that didn't end up, because you know that it's Le Pen, the fascist, and the neoliberal, the Hillary Clinton type, are the two people running for the president.
Creepy. Seriously,
very similar. But the thing that's really interesting about the French Bernie Sanders guy, I'm sorry that I don't know any of their names, was that he was actually wanted to work towards a $400,000 salary limit.
Sorry, there's shouting outside. I got distracted.
Sorry, yeah, no, there was weird shouting outside. But so this is the idea of a land value tax, because we were all like, I only heard about it in name, and then I like kind of looked it up a bit, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting, and I think it's just something. Basically, I'm interested in thinking about taxation differently, generally. So if you have also thought about that and like have like more thoughts on that, write into the show. But so land value taxation is so beloved of economists because in theory it does not distort decision making. Suppose a land value tax of 1% on land value is introduced tomorrow. There can be no supply response. There would still be as much land as there is today. Neither would consumers' preferences change, as land would be no more useful either. So if the market for land is competitive, no transactions would be deterred or encouraged. All that changes is the price, which falls until it exactly offsets the discounted cost of paying the tax forever. The buyer assumes the burden of paying the tax, so all things considered is no better or worse off. Landlords are unable to pass the tax on to tenants because the supply and demand of rented land is unchanged too. Furthermore, if LVTs replaced property taxes, incentives against improving homes and developing land would be removed, yet the tax would continue to account for undeserved gains landowners make on the investment of others, such as the government improving nearby transport links.
Right.
Yeah, so basically what the concept is that it's a flat tax on your land value, your land's value.
So basically, if for whatever reason you owned a $100 house and there was a 1% land value tax, then if your house was worth $100, you would pay $1 in taxes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. in that it's entering this conversation about taxation that I think is really important, which is actually trying to find a fair way to do it. Because everybody's like talks about like a flat tax or whatever. And it's like, well, 9% of someone who's making $20,000 a year looks a lot different than 9% for someone as far as like what that ends up being for like what you're using your money for, as far as like your actual budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that that's a really interesting.
Well, and I think that it something that like property tax, a way that it directly impacts people like us is that when property taxes increase, our rent goes up.
Right.
And so if the value, unless basically that would improve our situation, mm-hmm. because the property taxes wouldn't then be arbitrarily raised.
Right.
It would entirely depend on a new appraisal of that property to be done.
Right.
And okay. So basically, like, let's say that the apartment complex that Daniel and I live in is worth $1 million. Like, unless every year they have a realtor come in and do an appraisal of the right. value of this apartment complex, mm-hmm. then the land value tax would stay the same and there would be less reason for our rent to be raised.
Yep. And it's fairer and it makes sense conceptually, right? Because if you don't have land, you're not paying a tax. If you have some land, you are paying some tax, but not a lot. But if you have 4 or 8 homes or whatever, and you own a company that has land, you'd be paying tax on that land, and so that is a really interesting thought. Well,
and it wouldn't. And what's also nice is that it wouldn't be, because how property tax is dictated now is that it depends on where you live. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, I know that in the Milwaukee area, that property tax in Wauwatosa, property tax in Wauwatosa is higher than in other suburbs, like. Where, you know, and then there are some with like really high property tax, like Shorewood has really high property tax, mm-hmm. Wauwatosa has really high property tax. The city of Milwaukee's property tax is lower, and so there's like more incentive to buy property in the city of Milwaukee. But like, let's say, you know, you buy. But the thing is, I think, you know, what's worth mentioning is that housing prices in Milwaukee and in Wauwatosa are pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you buy, it would be like if you buy a house that you can afford in a city that you want to live in, you wouldn't then be paying for the city that you live in. You would only be paying for the land that you buy.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is interesting. Although, I think that on the other side of the coin is that, you know, if you're buying a $50,000 house in an area with amazing schools versus buying a $50,000 house in an area with terrible schools, or like the reputation, like let's say that, you know, like the article proposes, this policy is changed tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that property taxes go into schools, like public schools.
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's
so, or maybe not, but yeah. Let's say that property taxes do go to schools. So then, in theory, the areas with higher property taxes would have better schools. So then if it was instead entirely dependent on the value of the land, then would state funding or city funding then be all at a level playing field?
Well, you also got to consider that low income areas of land will also have a lot of commercial property, and not just yeah. commercial, but like business property, so like factories and stuff like that, and those factories would then have to pay a land value tax as well.
Has anyone else had Pocahontas in their head this whole time?
No.
You think you own whatever land you land on. That's his name.
The whole time. No, cool. That's a really interesting... That's super interesting. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Do you have your Twitter up?
I will not be satisfied until I hear Maureen's Twitter
thing. Yeah, no, let's do it.
Okay. Hold on. I don't have it up anymore because I felt discouraged.
Nope. We're gonna...
Okay, so remember when I said that I was live tweeting? I was also sorry that I was just like a weird martyr just then. So okay. I would live tweet nannying, and today I noticed that there was like a particularly choice stream of tweets while I was clearly nannying. The first one was, the boy I'm babysitting is cross-contaminating Play-Doh colors and it's really stressing me out. Yeah. And then I posted a picture of the Play-Doh colors, which I will show Josh and Daniel.
Oh, that gives me anxiety.
Yeah, I'm going to post that picture. I'm not going to be able
to sleep tonight because of that.
Oh, and the caption I posted on this picture was anarchy.
Play-Doh anarchy.
And then this is actually what really cracked me up earlier. Oh my god, there's a kids show where they just stuck googly eyes on remote control cars. It's actually super horrifying. And then I quoted a conversation between me and Bennett, the boy I was babysitting. Maureen, why do the cars have eyes? I really have no idea, Bennett. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I tweeted, I totally changed my mind. This is the best show ever. And then, I guess in that show, they were building a hut. The cars were building a hut, and they were really shitty at it. And so I said, yo, these googly eye cars suck at building shelter. Yeah. So yeah, I can relate to like reading past social media things and thinking fucking hilarious. Because I like read that at work and died.
Yeah, it's like almost a daily occurrence for me. A, say something that I don't remember that I ever had written out or said, and then B, think it was hilarious. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the thing is I'm just going to end up, I would be a really bad fascist.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess I'd be a really good one. Because mm-hmm. like the whole part of like burning books and like deleting history and like revisionism. I could nail that.
Good for you?
No, I just... yeah, I don't
Daniel's
know, I just,
the best fascist.
Oh my god, yeah. You'd be such a good fascist, Daniel.
I think I also recognize though that like the history of the internet, like you ever all shit that you've ever deleted is findable.
Yeah, you pretty think much, it's right? Not. It's like they're somewhere.
It's somewhere. Yeah, they keep histories of every website for like, I don't fucking know how it works, but they have they keep an archive of just like screenshots somewhere or something like that, basically. In order for the internet to work, it has to do that.
I'm so sorry. I was like looking at my Instagram stories and then all of a sudden you're talking about the internet keeping screenshots of things.
Well, basically...
I'm really
basically
sorry.
We were just saying that you can't really delete anything on the internet.
Oh, god.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of exists somewhere. Yeah.
I was like, how the fuck did we land here? Anyway, hard segue, and actually, yes. Serious thing, really quick. This is a trigger warning.
Yes.
We're about to discuss sexual assault. So if that is something that you do not want to listen to, then this is going to be the stopping point for you.
Yes.
Yes. So our friend Patrick, who we have not fucking had on our show yet.
Patrick's not been on. He will be on.
He
and
will
we're gonna
be on.
Drag him on a future QAO. Look forward to that because mm-hmm. he's hilarious.
He's, and also just like, you know, like woke.
Oh no, I mean like yeah. very smart. Yeah, and, yeah. Like, yeah.
I was hesitating to say woke just because I'm not. I don't think that I've ever described anyone as woke before.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But. I feel like it's relevant. I feel like it's applicable.
Yep, because Pat was texting with us and sent us these articles and
yeah, so to talk about. He sent us two separate articles about the rise of a sex trend called stealthing. which I had never heard of. And then after I read the two articles he sent us, I like broke out in like rage sweat. Yeah. I was like fucking so furious. So basically what it is, this came to light through a study conducted by Alexandra Brodsky in the Columbia Journal for Gender and Law. Basically, oh my God, I can't even fucking believe this. All right, so I'm reading an article from Teen Vogue, who's killing it. The opening sentence describes stealthing. A new study documents the rise of a particularly disturbing sex trend called stealthing, which is when a man removes a condom during sex without his partner's consent. Which is the most horrifying violation of trust.
Yeah.
I think I have ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, there's a lot of mincing with words about it, but it's rape.
It's rape. It is rape.
It is flat out sexual assault.
Well, and that's the thing is that when you consent to sex with a condom, you are specifically not consenting with sex without a condom.
Yep.
So then once a condom is removed and the sexual act continues, it is no longer consensual, which is rape.
Well, there was, in the Teen Vogue article, they mentioned that there was a Swiss court that ruled it, that convicted a man of rape for that.
Well, and then, so they go on to say that, here, I'm going to quote the article again. What's even more disturbing is the fact that stealthing is widely discussed online in some internet circles. Mm-hmm. Yes. And as Brodsky learned through her research, some men actually encourage one another to practice this behavior. According to the study, there are men who believed they are entitled to spread their seed and see stealthing as a tactic, that is within their rights. Brodsky notes that there are message boards online where men give one another tips for removing condoms during sex without their partner's knowledge. Proponents of stealthing root their support in an ideology of male supremacy in which violence is a man's natural right, she added. Which...
Yeah, and so Pat also sent us a Daily Mail article that, I mean, very similar in content to this one.
Yeah.
But I want to read, so one man cited in Brodsky's study laments about sleeping with a, quote, condom watcher who repeatedly checks to make sure the condom is in place. And also mentioned in this article is, it's a tweet by Twitter user Vonnie Bravo, who said apparently you can buy stealth condoms that break almost immediately.
So what I'm wondering about this, and I'm not sure if the Daily Mail article goes into this, but is it like for these horrible, horrible men, is it a sensation thing or is it a domination thing?
There's got to be a level of power in that.
Yeah, there has to be.
There has to be.
Because if it's just a matter of the condom, because at first I was like, oh, well, these are just skeezy guys who are trying to have sex without a condom because it feels better. But then, like, the fact that, oh, the condom just breaks. Like, oh, well, then the condom is still on.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading right now, because other posts share strategies on how to make condoms more breakable by poking holes in them.
Yeah.
Whatever. So you're having a condom breaking. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're not going to be having latex, you know, but it does mean that guaranteed. It's a power thing.
Yeah, so absolutely. It is entirely a power thing.
Yeah, and I for me, I hear a story like this, and I just think about the dark recesses of the internet. Yeah. You know, like the dark recesses of the internet that the Nazis can rise to power from.
Yes.
Because that's very much the world we're living in, is that, yeah, sure, the internet's a really powerful tool where, like, we can all have our voices be heard, but sometimes the people that are going to be having their voices heard and organizing are fucking rapists.
Yes.
And are Nazis. Okay. And, like, not that I don't really want to... I don't really want to get into the ethics of comparing Nazis and rapists. Let's just pretend I didn't set that up just now.
No, but I don't think you have to. I think it's a valid comparison, just in that it is the rise of people who organizing to do harm to others. How about that, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the internet is a strong organizational tool, and it it's useful for people trying to organize to do good, just as it's useful to people organizing trying to do bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
And it's crazy too, right? Because so many of these, like, I don't even know if it's, you would even call this right wing anymore, but just kind of like this other end of the spectrum, are co-opting like having a safe space, or like having, I don't know, like, it's, I'm now thinking about, have you seen this sponsored ad for CNN with Richard Spencer being interviewed by W. Kamau Bell, the black comedian?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and Richard Spencer basically, like, in the CNN makes it clear, which I'm actually, I guess I'm a little glad for, that they, because CNN has the potential to be shitty as a mainstream media outlet.
Oh, absolutely.
But they do, there is an effort to some extent to, like, in the headline, they were straight up like, he's a white nationalist, which, like, okay, all right. And the quotes that they show from him, from Richard Spencer, are like, I believe that women are inferior to men. I believe that that America is a white supremacist, like that white. I believe in white supremacy, and I believe that America is a white country, and that white people are natural dominators and conquerors, and that is why we desire to spread our culture. And I'm glad for that, but at the same time, I'm not glad for that. I'm
glad
that
they, like, you're glad for what?
I'm glad that, like, there is an opportunity to potentially be like, what the fuck are we doing? But then it's also like, why are you giving him a platform?
That's what irks me, honestly.
For ratings.
Yes. What happened, the same thing with Milo Yiannopoulos, right? Where, like, fucking, first off, fuck Bill Maher. If you think, you're progressive and you're like, I love Bill Maher,
you're not progressive.
You're not progressive. And it's like, he's not progressive. He's Islamophobic. He's xenophobic. He's sexist. I don't think that there are a lot of people that, like, are particularly, like, very anti-Bernie and then pro, what's his name? I already forgot his name. Bill Maher. But if you, like, if that's a thing, like, reassess your thing, man. Reassess your shit. Look at Bill Maher, like, objectively, and recognize that dude is racist and sexist, and, like, doing it on a guise of, like, I am the liberal messiah.
That man.
And he's just a neoliberal fuck.
Yes, he is.
He's not even neoliberal. He's, like, I don't even know. Because at least neoliberals are, like, live under the guise of being accepting, you know?
I don't know. I think the thing with neoliberalism, too, is that it's a matter of, like, priorities, right? Where it's, like profits over priorities, really.
Can I want to read a tweet.
Yeah,
that, please. I mean, it's not directly related, but exists in this world. And some, I saw this posted, and it's actually, so the Twitter user is Ava Vita. I think it's AvaAvita. And she's a trans woman from Chicago, which I ran, a friend from somewhere else in the country posted this, and I was looking at her feed, and I was like, oh shit, she's local. And what she tweeted, and it's like the best tweet I've ever read in my entire life. It says, "Dear white boys, you are not a brilliant rationalist untainted by emotion. You just think of maleness and whiteness as inherently impartial."
Yeah. I saw that. That's good.
It's, I like that.
The best thing. Because that's what these quote-unquote thinkers, these Bill Maher's and these people who support that, and Bernie Bros, not necessarily Bernie himself, but, you know, the Bernie Bro and the people.
Or even Richard Spencer.
And Richard Spencer. They think that... And you hear it, and I'm describing it just makes me nauseous, but it's the people who will go, Well, of course, I mean, you think that, and it's because you're a woman and you're faced with these things. But, you know, I think if you saw it my way, you know, it's like yeah. it's those people, and it's the well-actuallyers and stuff who think that because they're white and male and straight, there's an impartial...
They think that, like, X and Y axis, yeah. they think that they're the origin point. They think that they're exactly. zero. They think that they're 0, 0, and everything yes. else is just everything starts and ends with their perspective.
Whereas then, if you're say you're a black woman, right? So then you have these two things differing from them there, and so your opinions are going to be somehow more tainted by emotion than theirs. Or
it's like anything not white. Anything not white, cis, male...
Yes.
...is... anything not that experience impairs your judgment.
Yes, and you see it all the time. And people... And I think that people engage in that behavior without necessarily thinking of it that way, but it's very prevalent.
Absolutely.
Because it even is prevalent within the quote-unquote liberals, you know, right? You see it all the time.
That's the thing is, a lot of progressives now are starting to... like, leftists are starting to really call, like, mince and make synonymous the terms liberal and neoliberal.
Yes.
And it's fun to me to watch the term liberal actually come back to its roots of basically being a free market proponent versus, like, taking liberalism to mean, like... It's interesting, right? Because the right wants to call being liberal... being pro-healthcare and pro-Planned Parenthood. And it's like, well, no, when you look at the term liberalism, what it really means is that you're interested in a free market and a freedom entirely. And so liberalism conceptually and libertarianism conceptually are not that different.
Right.
And neoliberalism is just the movement in the last, like, 30 years or so to take liberalism and make it work inside of a bureaucratic system, bureaucratically capitalist system that we've now created for ourselves, trying to make capitalism work as hard as we can. And so, yeah, and like, anyway,
No, and it's very interesting to me because I don't think it was, even though I've been very interested in politics most of my life, I don't think it was until this election cycle that I even learned the difference when people use leftist as opposed to liberal.
Yeah.
I feel like I learned this so recently, you know?
Well, that's I guess my point too, is that there hasn't been that much of a difference until recently.
I guess so, yeah.
We're starting to re-recognize what it means to be liberal and what it means to the apparent and ready critique of neoliberalism, of Clintonism, if you will,
sure,
is so available to people that are having these conversations. And so being able to go like, oh, that is what neoliberalism is. That is not the tenets of progressivism. That is not FDR. You know,
right.
That is not leftism. That is not progressivism. And
like, it's this kind of establishment politics central, you know, it's centrist. They're mostly centrists. Really.
It's centrism. It is entirely centrism. And there are, of course, like things that we've learned from libertarianism and things that we've learned from liberalism. But there are also like recognizing that we need fire trucks. And, like,
yes.
recognizing that garbage disposal is a real thing. And, like, I don't know. It's interesting. And you also don't want to, like, be like, oh, well, I want to go full communist on this, because that's not necessarily where I'm at either. But I think that shutting the door to those kinds of conversations. The thing is that America, in its, like, inception, was meant to be this liberal beacon of, and meaning... actually conceptually this like free market, freedom of speech, free, like the build, like so many of our rights are so centered around like conceits of liberalism.
That something you said sparked in me a thought that has come up a couple times that I think bears repeating. I've probably mentioned it on the podcast before, but I think it, you know, like I said, it bears repeating. The idea that federal programs like, you know, the fire department and the postal service and stuff like that The fact that they're coming, not necessarily the fire department, of course, but I mean, you know, federal programs and state programs that inherently do not make money are coming under fire.
Yeah.
When they're not supposed to make money.
Right.
They exist purely to serve the public.
Right. And to make our lives better.
And the idea of, like, you know, the for example, the example I go to immediately is, you know, the idea of no longer needing a postal service in favor of FedEx or UPS.
Yeah.
Where with the postal service, you know, small towns, you know, with FedEx and UPS, they have no reason to set up shop in a 1,000-person town because they're not going to do as much business. You know, right. The mail isn't being as used as much anymore. So why would they want to set up shop in a really small town? Whereas, you know, the postal service, because there are U.S. citizens who live in these small towns, need to set up in these small towns.
Right, because these are taxpayers.
Because they're taxpayers, yeah. Exactly. And it doesn't matter how few of them there are. They don't exist to make money. They exist to serve taxpayers. And so I just think it's, like, upsetting, the idea that, you know, we are, especially with 45 being in an office and his background as being a businessman, it's just like, it's frustrating to me that we're evaluating these services as if they need to be profitable when inherently they should, they need to be held to a different standard of, right, are they functioning appropriately? And if they're not functioning appropriately, why? Is it lack of funding? Is it, you know, whoever is in charge of it is misallocating resources? Like, they need to be evaluated for how well they're functioning and not what revenue they're bringing in, because they don't bring in revenue.
Right. No, you're right.
We have a few minutes left.
What?
We have a few minutes left. So thank you all so much for listening so far. Josh, do you have any plugs?
I don't really, beyond what I don't. We could plug the upcoming Up Run Tap concert.
Yep.
May 9th.
Yep.
Oh, we have to rehearse. We're singing a trio, the three of us.
Yeah, we are.
I remembered that today.
Yeah, we'll I've sung it before, so. But anyway, upcoming Up Run Tap concert, May 9th. We're doing this at Redline Tap, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a Redline Tap. It's a Tuesday, 8 p.m., Redline Tap. It's a night of comedic opera, so it's
I'm putting it on my phone right now, because otherwise I'm not going to remember that I have to do that. Jesus Christ. Oh.
All right, well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
I'm a trash can that eats ducks.
Somebody needs to be keeping a list of the things that you are. Cool. If you like what you've heard so far today, let us know. Send us mail. We love that. ScopyMag@gmail.com. You can find us on ScopyMag.com. We've got articles there, old and new. I wrote an article this week and we published it. We're going to have a couple great ones coming up. I'm really excited about it. About that, we're finally fleshing out our writing resources. If you know anyone that wants to cover local events, please reach out to me. I'm always looking for writers for the magazine.
We can pay a little bit.
Yeah, we can.
A little bit.
We'll talk about it. You can find us on social media, on Facebook, Scopy Magazine. Please head over there. Throw us a like if you can. If you see our posts pop up, please throw us a like. We'd really appreciate it. It means a lot, and it makes it so that other people can see what we're posting, and it's really helpful. You can find us also on Instagram and Twitter at Scopy Mag.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We are trying to build an online presence, and we can't do that without financial support. We run on a shoestring budget, and with performances that we're planning this summer and just general growth, you know, we sorry, I'm not doing this as well as I usually am.
You're doing great.
We need more money.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to express to you how much it means to us to have the financial support that we have already.
Yes.
We're so appreciative to our monthly subscribers and to those who have done one-time donations. It's really incredible. And honestly, the support that we've received so far exceeded our expectations for what we would receive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really heartening. And it's because of your support that we are looking to expand.
Yep.
And that is why we need more money. Please head to scopymag.com. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Please head to scopymag.com. Go to our About section. You can do a one-time donation, in which case we will write you a handwritten thank you note and send it to your abode. Or if you become a monthly subscriber, we'll give you a shout-out on the show, and you will be granted such, amazing privileges as being able to come to our apartment and watch some performances this summer by some really amazing, amazing talent. So please become a monthly subscriber for as little as $5 a month. You can really make a big difference in our lives and your life, because the more money we get, the better we can make this. So give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, I almost said if you can't live, if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Yeah, thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.